The Round Table on Crick Info Talk.
Welcome to the second part of this Crick Info Roundtable, where we're discussing the art of captaincy. We've spoken about what makes an ideal captain and the issues that captains face in the subcontinent. To throw more light on what is obviously the most high-profile and coveted job in world cricket, I'm joined once again by Ian Chappell and Sanjay Manjrekar.
If a captain is under so much pressure and if he's the one that who has to take the flak when things go wrong, don't you think there's a strong case for him to have more powers in issues like team selection? But if not the squad, at least the final 11 that steps onto the field, don't you think he should be the one fully in control of that? I'd like to hear from both of you on this.
Absolutely. I mean, Imran Khan was the first Asian captain who came out in the Open and he said, you know, if I'm going to be held responsible for the performance of my team, I need to have a say in the selection of the team. And in fact, you know, there have been occasions in the past when Imran Khan, a team was selected, Imran Khan was then appointed captain, and he insisted on three or four changes. So there were players who were dropped after being selected because Imran felt that they wouldn't really help him win matches, you know, in that particular series that was upcoming at the time. So no doubt, I mean, there's got to be more power given to the captain. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, in Indian cricket, again, due to pressure from media and public, you have the chairman of selectors traveling with the team on tours. And in a home series, you have the full selection committee getting together, sometimes on the cricket field before the start of a match, to pick 11 players from the 14. Can you imagine the captain, vice-captain, coach and five selectors, eight guys getting onto the cricket field just before the match starts to select 11 out of 14? I think that's far too many people getting involved in, you know, what is quite a simple job. I mean, if a captain knows his team, I think he's the best man to select the 11 and the players that he wants to help him achieve his goal. I don't think there should be too much interference there. A selection committee can give a squad according to the wishes of the captain, take his views on the matter. But once a squad is given to the captain, it should really be up to the captain to select the 11 for every match that he plays.
Yeah, well, I mean, I always used to think that the captain should have a vote on the selection panel, but I changed my mind after listening to Richie Beno. Richie's reasoning was that if you push for a player at the selection table, let's say he was a bowler, then you might, as a captain, bowl him to help, you know, prove your point that this was the right bowler to have, rather than because he was the best man to take a wicket for your team at that time. And I think this is something that needs to be addressed in modern cricket. You know, I think the choice of your chairman and your selectors is much more important, and I think they should be much higher paid than any coach that you can ever have, because they'll do more good for the team in winning matches than even the best of coaches. This is where modern cricket is going down the wrong path. I think they've got to place more importance on the selection role than the coaching role. And I think, I don't think it's any coincidence that India have had a pretty good two or three months, both in England and now here in South Africa, without a coach. But that's another point. Sanjay is quite right about a squad. I mean, the Australian system when I was captain was, the captain didn't get a vote, and basically I didn't have any say. I would have preferred to have had a bit of say and been listened to, but, you know, the only time I ever asked for a player, I didn't get him, and I think it probably, well, partly caused us to not lose a series, but draw a series that we could have won. But once you go on tour, and once you're given a squad of 15 or 16 players, it is exactly as Sanjay described it, a very simple task to pick 11, pick the best 11. And I found that the system of captain, vice-captain and third selector, who was also a player, was quite sufficient on tour. I think it's total rubbish to have, you know, to have all these guys traipsing around the world and, you know, to have eight people trying to make the decision. All that's doing is complicating what is a pretty simple issue. There was a great rugby league coach in Australia called Jack Gibson, who was very, very successful, and he chose the teams himself. And he was once asked, I should prefix this by saying that he did have a very dry sense of humour, and he was asked why he preferred the sole selector method, and he said because it cuts down on the catering. Jack was very quick to simplify things and not let them get too complicated. And I think not just with selection, but a lot of things are complicated in the game of cricket these days. Teams would be much better off if they uncomplicated them.
Another thing that's constantly said in cricket is that the captain is only as good as his team. It seems like pretty much anyone can captain Australia and they'll still deliver results. It seems like someone like Brian Lara, no matter how good he is, couldn't get much out of his West Indian team. How true is this thing that's now assumed as a truism, that a captain is only as good as his team?
I think there's a couple of points to that. In fact, I was about to make one earlier on and I completely forgot it. The important thing for a captain, first of all, is when he takes over a team, he's got to get the best out of that team. I'm not going to tell you for a moment that you can make a bad cricket team into an exceptionally good one, but you can make a bad cricket team better with good captaincy. And you don't always just judge captains on the number of wins and the number of losses they've had. You know, no one's had more wins for Australia than Steve Waugh, but I don't think he's... I think out of the last, four captains we've had, Australia's had, I think he's probably the fourth best. You know, I think Mark Taylor is one. I'm not quite sure where to put Ricky Ponting at the moment, but I'd certainly put him above Steve Waugh, and I'd have Border ahead of Steve Waugh. So wins and losses aren't the sole way to judge captains. And I'd refute your statement about anybody could captain Australia, because we've had, in recent times, admittedly with a few players missing, lost 3-0 to New Zealand right on the eve of the World Cup. And yet Ricky Ponting came back, took over the side, as I said, admittedly with a couple of extra players coming back as well. But they didn't lose a game in the World Cup. Now, here at the T20, we've had Ricky Ponting missing through injury, and they've lost to Pakistan without him on the field, and then they've lost again to India without him on the field. I believe that the current Australian side is a better side when they're led by Ricky Ponting. And I thought that Arjuna Runatunga was one of the better captains in around the world at the time when he captained. And yet if you looked at his one-loss record, it probably isn't great. But and I'm not just talking about because he won the World Cup with Sri Lanka. I'm talking about his Test match captaincy as well. I don't think it is a truism that a captain is only as good as his team, because, in other words, you're saying if it's a bad team, he'll be a bad captain. Sri Lanka weren't a bad team, but they also weren't a very good team when Arjuna captained them, but he was a good captain. So I don't believe that is a truism.
Sanjay, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I would say, Anna, it's something that I've discussed with Ian Chappell. I think a captain of the Indian or the Pakistani team, not so much Sri Lanka. I've always found Sri Lanka a lot different temperamentally than Indians and Pakistanis. I think choosing a captain of the Indian and Pakistani team is a more critical decision than maybe choosing a captain for the Australian team. Because, you know, somehow it's the nature of Indians and Pakistanis that leadership, they get tremendously inspired by leadership. They need somebody to show them direction. They need somebody who can keep them happy, keep their confidence going. Because, you know, we are sensitive people. And if there is a captain who recognizes all this and has those qualities to bring out the best in every individual, well, it has its effect on the team. And a great example was Pakistan under Imran Khan. And during the same time, on the odd occasions when Javed Miada took over, sometimes there used to be a revolt in the team. You know, so yes, you know, captaincy is important, and a leader, you know, of a team does play a major role in the performance of the team. But especially, I think, in India and Pakistan, leadership is that much more critical to the performance of the team.
Now, Ian spoke earlier about how a team would hamstring itself by not choosing its best 11, and therefore you can't play 10 against 11. There's a captain as a leader of his men, and there's a captain who's also a player, a very important player in an 11 usually. So to what extent can you actually hold the captain responsible for the team's performance? Or more importantly, how much can you hold him responsible when the team fails to perform?
A cricket team wins because they've played well together as a team and they've been well led. But a captain can make decisions that will cause the team to lose. You know, it's probably not quite a black and white. To me, there was a critical point in the game. 17 overs had been bowled. Mahendra Singh Dhoni had the choice of Sharma or Harbhajan Singh to bowl. Now, he could easily have lost that game last night if he'd have gone with Sharma at that point, because he needed a very good over. not a lot of runs off it, and if he could get a wicket at that point, it was going to make a huge difference in the game. And he went with Harbhajan Singh, which, you know, to me was the right decision. And I'm not talking about, you know, second guessing and being smart after the event, because I said it before he made the choice. What he did then that was to make things easier for Sharma in that last over, because he then got a very good over out of RP Singh. So he put his player in the best position for him to succeed. Now, if a captain keeps doing that, then he'll win a lot more matches than he loses. But if it had gone the other way, and if Sharma had had a very poor over, then he wouldn't have been putting Harbhajan and RP Singh in their best position to help India win the game. That's how critical a captain's decisions can be. You're not probably going to make too many decisions that actually physically win the game for your team, but you can make some decisions that could contribute greatly to your team losing.
You know, to know a good captain, also you need to have a person who really understands the game. So let's say the chairman of selectors, you know, watching yesterday's game, he should be smart enough and have the experience at the highest level to know that Mahendra Singh Dhoni made the right decision. Now, I'll use the same example to also give you an idea as to how the media is back home here in India. Now, Mahendra Singh Dhoni made the right decision, and it was Joginder Sharma bowling the final over. If Joginder Sharma was strong for 30 runs in that over, Mahendra Singh Dhoni would have been criticized, and, you know, he would have been crucified as well for that decision of getting Joginder Sharma to bowl the last over. But a good student of the game, a good chairman of selectors who has played the game, will realize that Mahendra Singh Dhoni made the right decision by bowling Harbhajan Singh before and RP Singh before giving that final over to Joginder Sharma. And he would say that that was a good move, even if the result was negative. And the problem in Indian cricket that happens is, in spite of having men who really understand the game, who know what is right and wrong, know who is playing well, who is leading well, they just go by the results, and that is because of the media and the public pressure. So if Dhoni, by taking some good decisions, loses a few games, there is a simplistic answer to that for the media, and thereby, you know, the selectors and the BCCI are then reacting to, through pressure and get influenced by the masses' reaction, would term Dhoni's stint as bad leadership.
Well, we're just about running out of time here, so I have one final question for both of you. In all your experience playing and watching the game, especially giving extra weightage to playing, who would your three best captains be? And would you explain that decision a little bit? Let's start with Ian.
I played against him only at first class level, but I watched him a lot as a young bloke growing up, and Richie Beno was a terrific captain, and he had a big influence on my style of captaincy. I'd rank him very high. I'm probably going to go a bit beyond the three, actually, but not too far. Ray Illingworth, I captained against him in 1972. I learned a lot about captaincy from Ray Illingworth, and I thought he was a very good captain, particularly in the art of, and I think this is the most difficult art as a captain, in a situation where you've got to save runs, but you've also got to keep trying to take wickets. Ray Illingworth was brilliant in those circumstances, and he always let you know, as an opposing player, he always let you know that he was trying to get you out, even when you knew that, or you felt that your team was on top and that he needed to be saving runs. Imran Khan, I think, was a terrific captain. He had leadership qualities, but I remember reading his book, and he made a very good point where he said he felt that all captains must understand bowling and bowlers to be good. And certainly Imran was very good in that regard, and I think that Imran got the absolute best out of a bowler like Abdul Qadir, and also Wasim Akram. In fact, Imran got the absolute best out of his Pakistan teams. Mark Taylor, I thought, was an exceptionally good captain for Australia. He was intuitive. He had a good imagination as a captain. Yeah, he got the team playing for him, which is always important. And the guy that I mentioned earlier on, Arjuna Ranatunga, I always had a great deal of respect and a high regard for Arjuna as a captain. I liked the way that he took a lot of the flak for his team. You know, he was the sort of guy who could handle opponent very well, opponents who wanted to be aggressive on the basis of, well, we can intimidate these guys. And Arjuna was very good at taking that and deflecting it from his team and putting the onus back on the opposition. He was the only guy in world cricket in 1996 during that World Cup when Australia refused to play in Sri Lanka and forfeited the match. Arjuna came out and said, we want Australia in the finals. Well, Australia were a very good side at that point, and there weren't any other captains around the world saying, we want Australia, bring them on. But Arjuna did it, and Arjuna, in his own way, went into that 96 World Cup final with a psychological advantage in his camp. And that wasn't an easy thing to do against a strong side like Australia. So that would be my list of best captains that I've seen and played with or against.
There have been many great captains. There have been captains that I've heard from, you know, other cricketers as to how great they were. But I'll name three that I sort of had close contact with, so I was really able to understand them, guys that I played against and played with, and one captain that I've watched very closely in the last 2 years. So I won't go into people like Richie Benno, great Ian Chappell, because I didn't play against them, but my pick as the three best that I feel today would be Imran Khan. When I played against him, absolute role model. In fact, I couldn't find a weakness in him as a cricketer or as a captain. The second one would be Mark Taylor. He wasn't a great batsman in his own right, but just by setting an example of, you know, honest hard work and being pretty straightforward with the good tactics to go with all those qualities on the field, Mark Taylor would be a captain that I would rate very highly. And let me pick one from the new generation, a young captain who is making rapid strides in world cricket, and I've watched him very closely in the last 2 years because I've been fortunate enough to travel to Sri Lanka on a few occasions. Mahela Jayawardene would be my third best captain I've was connected with. You know, these are the three names that I would pick.
Manjrekar and Ian Chappell, thank you very much for speaking with us. We've had some very, very interesting views on captaincy coming out from this discussion. We've ranged from the very philosophical to the broad to right down to specific instances discussing Dravid and Dhoni and the future even. Till we meet next time, it's goodbye. This is Anand Vasu for Crickinfo signing off from this roundtable. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
This is Crickinfo Talk.